Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters. I'm Leanne Dolan here in Pasadena, California. It is Tuesday, April 21st. I am with my sister Julie Dolan in Dallas, Texas. Julie, I feel like I've been gone for 2 years. I mean,
have you been, Leanne? I've missed you.
I know. I'm going to tell you all about it, but that was just epic. I don't normally go away for 9 days to 3 cities and multiple airports. And wow, I feel like I saw a lot of the country and did some wild and white, crazy things. So I'm going to tell you all about my trip today. What's been happening where you are?
Well, Leanne, not too much. Okay. We've been waiting for your return. We've been working hard, Leanne, when you were away, just churning out those podcasts. That's what we've been doing.
Good. Excellent.
You caught me with that question,
Leanne. I'm sorry.
I didn't have an answer.
Well, I thought you had a special dedication for the show today.
I do have a special dedication. Is it time for me to do
my special? Now, do the dedication.
Okay. I think that it is very appropriate that we dedicate this show on April 21st to the Duchess Kate, because, you know, this is, we're coming to the end of April and she is expecting her second child at the end of April. So it could happen anytime. So as she's sort of padding around the palace there in her bare feet because her shoes don't fit anymore. I don't think that's the case with Kate. We just wanted to know we're dedicating this show to her and to the baby. And I hear, Leanne, from reports from royal watchers that one of the names that's in the running for the new royal baby is Alice.
I have seen that too, Julie.
Yes. And of course, as longtime listeners to Satellite Sisters will know, my first grandchild is named Alice. So what I see that is just, first of all, a wonderful name and then a great benefit, because I believe there will be a lot of products that will have the name Alice on it. Right? Don't you think?
Yes.
Yes. So it will be easy to get birthday and holiday gifts for my granddaughter that will look like they're monogrammed, but they're really not. So this show is for you, Kate. Okay.
That's nice of you, Julie. And I know a couple weeks ago we considered doing recaps of The Royals, the new show on the E's, and then E Network, and then we decided it was even too trashy for us.
Yes.
But I have still been enjoying that show.
You have?
Oh, gosh. Oh, it's really descended into complete trashiness. But so I just wanted to let people know, if they want to talk to me about it personally, we can recuse ourselves to the Facebook page and do that, because it's just the stupidest show of all time in the best possible way. So there you go. But we are going to get to Sister Sasnatch. We have a double episode situation, because I was not available last Tuesday to do the recap of episode 10. And then, of course, there has been episode 11. So both were jam-packed with action and jam-packed with other things. And we're going to talk.
Yes, they were. There was a lot of jamming, Leanne. Yes.
Julie. So we're going to get to that at the end of the show. It's Tuesday. We have Tuesday trends. Mm-hmm. We have some really important world news coming out of Target. So we're going to talk to you about that. But Julie, let me just give you a brief personal recap of what I've been up to for the last 10 days.
Because do I need a map of the United States to follow along at home, Leanne? I mean, where have you been?
All right. Well, here's what happened. I committed to two things about 15 months ago. I committed to a girls' weekend with my high school friends. One of my friends had lost her home in Hurricane Sandy. It blew down, so they had to build a whole new house. So she wanted to celebrate that. She said, let's do it at my house at Fairfield Beach, where I grew up. So that sounded good. And I had been asked by my hometown library on several occasions to speak there. And I thought, well, as long as I'm going to fly all the way to Connecticut, I'll do that. And I'll speak at the library on Sunday. And I picked this particular date because it looked like it might jibe with my son Colin's spring vacation, and maybe we would get in a college tour. Mm-hmm. And so he'd come with me, and then I'd stick him on a plane and I'd stay for the weekend. But then his robotics team qualified for the World Robotics Championships in Louisville the following week. So long story short, Colin, we skipped the college tour, but I still had committed to Connecticut. So I flew into New York, rented a car, drove to Connecticut, you know, did my speech, had my girls' weekend, got in my own personal college tour.
Well, you did mention you wanted to go back to school, Liam.
Yeah.
Well, so are you applying?
No, this is just, you know, for him. But I was there and I had a rental car, so I thought I might as well go look at a campus. And then I got on the plane in LaGuardia, and I had to go through Charlotte. And I only mentioned that because it was pouring rain and the president arrived. So needless to say, the airport was frozen, and my plane was very late into Louisville. And then I spent the next 4 days at the World's Robotics Championship in Louisville. So it was a lot of airports, but it was a lot of fun.
It's hard to dress for those kind of events, Liam. World Robotics events and big public speaking tours.
It was
hard to know what to pack.
And, you know, because I was on so many different short hops and I was actually on two different airlines, all of a sudden, like, checking a bag got very expensive, as mm-hmm. it does now. I was like,
yes.
Really? So I ended up carrying on stuff, but then packing auxiliary stuff in Colin's bag. I had to pre-pack 10 days before, like, get a little bag of stuff for robotics, Julie. I had my high school t-shirt, my hat, some comfort sandals that I absolutely needed at the convention center, and like a clean pair of yoga pants. That went in his bag. I had my roller
bag. Is that the official outfit of robotic moms?
Yes.
Robo
yes,
moms?
It is.
Is that what?
It is. It is.
It's a good look.
It is. Super look. And then in Connecticut, of course, my friends and family, they gave me lots of gifts, but I didn't have another inch of stuff to carry on. So then I had to actually mail two giant packages home from Connecticut. Not the least of which was the fact that they have really good Goodwills in Fairfield County. And I found a beautiful Banana Republic suit for my son to wear to the prom this weekend.
You went to the Goodwill?
Went to the Goodwill.
Well, this was a trip.
It was a journey.
Maybe your next book should be about this trip. For everyone.
My friend Liz lives on Martha's Vineyard, where there are no stores except vineyard vines. And she has a high school son, too, who needed a suit. So she said, have you seen the new Goodwill in Westport? It's like a Neiman Marcus. It's like the most beautiful Goodwill you've ever seen. And she was absolutely right. It was a fantastic Goodwill. So there was this never worn before tags on Banana Republic European cut suit that I know was a $400 suit because I just looked at them for $50. How could I not buy that? So I bought it, shipped it home. But that's what I mean. I was mailing stuff. I was dragging stuff. I was shoving stuff in my pockets to get it on the plane. A lot of different trips, but I did it. But first, I would just like to thank all of the Satellite Sisterhood that showed up at Pequot Library. I had low expectations. I really didn't think anyone would come. I was thinking it was just like something that would be fun to do at the end of this girl's weekend. But we had a great crowd. There were people that came from the Jersey Shore and for other parts of Connecticut and all over the place. And it was really, really fun that you showed up. But Julie, it was like, this is your life. Leanne Dolan, because my parents moved from Connecticut when I was in college. So I haven't really spent substantial amounts of time in my hometown in 30 years. Mm-hmm. So I don't have that experience of running into people. And this was, I don't have that. So this was really the first time I had seen people in 30 years. And honest to goodness, my ballet teacher showed up. Aww. Mrs. Gaynor showed up. I mean,
so
and
she, nice.
I couldn't believe it when she showed up. I was like, Mrs. Gaynor. And she looks like Judy freaking Collins. She looks unbelievably beautiful. She's like a slightly older Judy Collins. My high school drama teacher showed up. She had read about it in the paper. And there was Miss Congella. She looked unbelievable. I said, you must have been like 22 when you were teaching at the high school. She said, I was like 23 when you were there. So she looked great. There were people I babysat for. You know, I had my family, the Jensens, that mm-hmm. I was a mother's helper for many years. And they were there. And they brought pictures of the kids that I had sat for, who are now like 38. and have children of their own. But that was great. My Aunt Nancy was there. There were quite
our
a few.
Our brother Jim introduced you. Right?
He gave the introduction. He did a masterful job. I mean, it was I barely needed to say anything. He pretty much covered everything I was going to talk about, but he did a really wonderful, thoughtful job. Of course, Jim did. My niece Megan came from Long Island. She's expecting her first child, so it was fun to see her. My aunt Nancy was there, who is much more famous than we are in Fairfield, Connecticut, because yes. she is one of the biggest real estate agents in town. So she has a cult following. People ask, I can't tell you how many people said to me, are you related to Nancy Dolan? I was like, yes.
That's how I identify myself now when yes. I return to Connecticut. I just say I'm Nancy Dolan's niece.
Yeah. So my aunt Nancy was there, the whole Dolan contingent in their blue blazers. Good to have them all as always. Good. I mean, it was friends of mom showed up, you know, which was super nice. Now, a lot of women, Mrs. Baldwin was there and Mrs. Van Arnum, Julie, sends a special hello to you and to Brendan. Yes. And I mean, it was really overwhelming. And I had actually prepared kind of some funny material about the people in the audience who I kind of had a heads up might show, like my high school friends, obviously, and stuff. I got up in that podium. I was so overwhelmed. I couldn't speak. It was
Did you choke up, Leanne?
Totally choked up. I mean, it was really something to be back in this room. I spent a lot of time in that library growing up. That particular room is where I went to dancing school. So it was the night of many torturous social events. Our dad was on the board of the Pequot Library. It has kind of a spectacular rare books collection for a public library. So it's just, it was very emotional. I was really surprised. I pulled it together, but I thought, oh, I left so much good material on the table, but I just couldn't. I thought if I start down that route, I'm just going to cry like a baby. So I did not do that, but it was really, really fun. And I wanted to thank all of the Satellite Sisterhood that showed up. It was really an unexpected treat to speak there. And it was great.
If you're in our Facebook group, you have seen the lovely pictures of Leanne at the Pequot Library that were posted at the Satellite Sisters Facebook group. There, you look lovely. The poncho is a totally winning look.
It was a good look. Uh-huh. That was a last minute. Like I was gonna do something else more complicated, and I saw that. I'm like, I'm going for it. Going for the poncho. It's artsy, but not too much. Doesn't scare people in Connecticut that much. And then I did get a blowout that day because I thought, you know, what if one of my old boyfriends from high school shows up? And then I remembered I didn't have any boyfriends in high school. So that was unlikely.
Oh, that solves that problem.
That they were going to show. But it was really, really kind of a special event. So thanks to Pequot for inviting me. That was fun. And then...
But that's early on. I mean, people don't relax. Okay.
Yeah.
We're only on like day three of her journey. Okay.
Yeah. I had fun with my high school friends. One came down from Martha's Vineyard. She's lived there for 30 years. My friend Alyssa's house just finished at the beach. And so literally there was only a bed in it. She didn't have any furniture in yet. But that was great. We hadn't again spent any substantial time together in quite a few years. So we took a dance class together, woke up early in the morning, went to dance class because that's where we all met at dance class. And we went out to dinner. We walked on the beach. We did something we never did in high school, but we did it. We went bowling. We went disco bowling.
Really living it up.
My friend Alyssa, she just loud things. It's not her thing anymore. Like she can't go to a club. She wears earplugs regularly, like just walking around town. So she wasn't quite ready for a club, but we knew we needed an after dinner activity.
Disco bowling.
I'm a terrible bowler and remain so, and the disco music doesn't help, but it was really fun. So it was, and then we went to the Goodwill. So what more can you say?
That is a fun weekend. Okay, you want to know the elements of a girls' weekend? You just heard it, folks. Disco bowling, Goodwill.
Dance class.
Oh, dance class. Okay, Leanne.
And then I had like an extra day to kill before I went to Louisville. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go. I'm going to call. My son's interested, or I'm interested for my son. I'm not going to kid you. There's a small liberal arts school in Connecticut I think might be good for him if he wants to go to a small liberal arts school in Connecticut. You know, we're just starting that. He's a junior. I'm not going to say the name because I want him to have some privacy, but they're very similar, all the small liberal arts schools in Connecticut. So But I called the campus beforehand. I'm like, is it weird if I show up without a student? Like, I don't want to be the weird, creepy helicopter parent. But, you know, we do live in California. It's an expensive trip out here. I can't guarantee he's going to be able to come before he applies. So they said, no, no, we have lots of weird, creepy parents that show up on their own.
Yeah, I think that's the norm now. Most it's the ones that like move in the dorm room. You know, that's where they have to draw the line. So our sister Sheila should start going on college tours. She could meet some like single parents.
Oh, no, no, wait.
Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do.
because
there are just so many fun things to frame, Leon, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah, any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already Framebridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this sounds
like...
But you're
going to be happy, okay? Yeah. That's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge. Hey, it's Liz and Leon here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leon, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leon Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leon's, okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leon and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled P-R-O-S-E. pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS.
Later on in the trip, I met the guy for Sheila.
I met him.
Okay. I spotted him. So I went on this college tour, which was really fun. It was a beautiful school, and there was a presentation. And here was the problem. Like, the kids were not interested in responding at all. This admissions mm-hmm. counselor was desperately trying to create an interactive session, like introduce yourself. Where are you from? What are your extracurriculars? And, you know, what do you think this means? Or what does interdisciplinary mean to you? Or who can define a liberal arts education? And they were not having it.
They don't want to answer that.
they did not want to answer anything. Mm-hmm. And it was killing me not to raise my hand and answer.
Because you knew the answer, didn't you?
I did. Like, I know the answer, Julie. I know what interdisciplinary means. So so they asked all the kids, you know, where they were from and their extracurriculars. And then he sort of looked at me because, again, I'm the only one there without a child. So he said,
but you got the poncho on, so you could be any age.
No,
all right, go
Julie,
ahead.
Julie, I was wearing that red raincoat at that, the one I didn't get to wear in DC.
Yeah,
that was
could be any age
because it was raining. So that was helpful. And, I said, I'm Leon. I'm from Pasadena, California, and my extracurriculars are laundry and grocery shopping. And so got a good laugh.
So you were working the room, Leon? You're on a college tour and you're trying out
some material. Yeah.
Oh, brother. And you got a laugh. Okay. So is that what's your new like hobby? You're just going to go on college tour?
A plant. It was really affirming. It was really, I have to say, self-affirming. But it looked like an excellent college. I mean, let's face it, college is excellent. So it looked like an excellent college. And then I headed off to Louisville to the World Robotics Championships. My son's team had qualified at the last minute at the California State Championships by making the semifinals. I had no idea what to expect, except I knew there was a group stage where they did a lot of qualifying matches. And then they had to finish in the top eight to be guaranteed to get out of the group stage and move on to the playoffs. And my son had mistakenly told me that the group stage was only one day. So in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have like 3 days to kill in Louisville. So I better plan some activities.
Go more college tours?
Yeah, I know. I could go see Louisville. But the good news was they won the group stage
and then
they moved into the playoff round. They were seeded seventh in their division. They teamed up with the number one team in their division. I have explained in robotics before, they work in tandem. They work in teams, but they get to draft their own teammates when they get to the playoff stage. And they were drafted by the number one Chinese team, Julie, which
seems like a powerful ally to have.
Just what you want. I mean, really.
Yes, you do. Really. I mean, I cannot think of a team that, maybe the Japanese. But
no, you know what, Julie? You know who the robotics powerhouses are and the eventual winners? New Zealand. No.
New Zealand?
Yeah, New Zealand. Yeah. They got Lord of the Rings and robotics, and that's it.
They got a lot of time out on that island, and that's what they're doing. Okay, very interesting.
But long story short, it was an incredible experience. It would have been an incredible experience anyway, because it really felt like a world championships. Here's some things to love. They had an opening ceremonies, Julie. There mm-hmm. were 29 different countries represented.
That's impressive.
It was impressive. Everything from New Zealand, China, India, South Korea, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Canada, England. I thought there was just going to be like one team from Canada
and they were going to call it international, like a lot of airports.
Big contingency from Mexico, big contingency from Colombia, from Brazil. I mean, unbelievable. The parade of nations that they held. It was in a huge expo center. They had a stage, Julie. They had giant screens where they were showing, the live feed. There was fireworks. There was music.
And what did you wear to the opening ceremonies?
Julie,
I wore my pants and the t-shirt.
And the baseball hat. Yes, and the comfort shoes. That's what I wore, Julie. That's what I wore. But it was unbelievable. It was really fantastic. I loved the whole thing. And then, you know who else is great? The mayor of Louisville. So he showed up and he'd be a good date for Sheila. I don't know if he's single. So I know we have some satellite sisters that maybe could get me some intel on the mayor of Louisville, but he's a very charming guy. So,
all right.
There you have it. And then we had, you know, the whole thing was just about kids kind of finding their tribe. These are really the Nerd Olympics. These are kids that are into STEM and math and science and finding, you know, creative solutions to technical problems. And there were some amazing robots there, clearly some really smart, intense kids. It was just super fun to be a part of it. And I, you know, I think those kids used to get lost in the system. You know, they'd be the weird kids in the corner. Mm-hmm. And now they have their thing. They've got
And they're going to rule the world, Lynn, because robots are going to rule the world.
Yes, they are. No, as one very intense robotics dad said to me, who's worked in technology and done very, very well in technology, said, he goes, you know, our generation had Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, but these are the kids that are taking the internet and then making it happen in a different way. They are using the internet to now create manufacturing. So he said, I know that I have a picture here of one kid that's going to start $100 million company, you know, probably $1 billion company.
So did Colin get any, did he get any first round funding at this event?
Yeah, the VCs were swarming.
Well, let me ask you, you know, because your background is that you are a sports parent. Your older son played soccer for, like, I don't know, 50 years. Yeah. You know, you were constantly going to matches and games and things like that. So you're very experienced. What are the parents like of robotic kids?
You know,
Is it the same sort of caliber where, you know, some are, you know, overly aggressive, or, you know, what's going on in the stands?
That's a good question. You know, it's clear some people know a lot more than I do about the actual mechanics and programming of robotics.
Shocking information.
Right. Okay. So there's a group of parents like me that are just enthusiastic. We enjoy watching it. Then there is the next level of parents that clearly have a scientific background and can understand it on a deeper level. So you do see them. There are parents, quote, coaching from the sidelines, yelling things out, just like a soccer match. Man on, man on. They're yelling things.
What are they yelling at? Are you broke?
Just hilarious. I mean, it just made me line up differently. You're an inch off. You're an inch off. I mean, it's just, I'll go for the cones. I mean, it's just hilarious, like, to me. And then there are the parents that are just outright programming the robot. And that, clearly, I won't point fingers at any specific country, Singapore, but, clearly there were coaches that were just, you saw it really at the middle school level where these robots were performing at a much, much higher level than I know a middle schooler could do. Yes. So they were clearly overly involved coaches, but you know, you could tell the intensity really got jacked up on the last day as they go for their qualifying matches. And then we move into the playoff rounds. And then, Julie, I was on the plane and leaving Louisville. I happened to be on a different flight than my son, just because I had to go to 12 cities and he only had to go to one. And there was I was talking to the kid next to me who was from Hawaii. His team from Hawaii had qualified. He was a middle schooler, came over, and he asked how my son did. And I told him. And then this one coach turned around and said, "Oh, are you Robot 4800? I was like, "Yeah." Well, she started trash talking our robot, Julie. She was trash. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was taking me down on the plane. They clearly wanted to team up with the Chinese. She felt like she had a better robot. And I was like, are you trash talking my robot? Like, what the?
Get a TSA agent. Get her off the plane. Whoa. That's really shocking.
Okay. But my favorite moment of the entire event came at the end. So there are five divisions of 90 high school teams. So there were 450 high school teams. My son wins his division with the Chinese team. It's an alliance with St. Francis, the Chinese team, and a team from Tennessee. These three move to the big stage area. They have five pits all set up. You know, again, lights, live streaming. They're going to play this round robin thing. And then the two top teams will go for the finals. And that's where they finished fourth overall. So they, but in interspersed, they have all these awards and everything. And the big sponsor of the event was the U.S. Army. And so they managed to, like, go to Central Casting and find the most handsome Army colonel you've ever seen. Like,
okay,
fully decorated, shows up. He's going to give out the design award, which is kind of the big award, like for the best designed robot. That's a big deal. And but he introduces himself that he went to West Point, was a mechanical engineering major, and then talks about how the Army wants kids like you, and you know, we can give you money for college, doesn't matter if you're going to Stanford or the Ivy Leagues, you know, that there are ROTC programs there and everything. And one of the hallmarks of robotics, which just says a lot about the kids who are dressed in capes and fedoras and wearing costumes and just letting their freak flags fly, is that they can name the teams anything. They don't have to be named, you know, St. Francis High Robotics. They can be the Robo Tigers, or they can be, you know, one team was We're Big in Japan, you know, and another team was the Cheesy Poofs, you know, and these are from like real high schools. One team just was named Timmy, which I thought was really funny.
Sort of ironic.
So here's like Mr. Army Colonel, and he announces the big award. The design award goes to a team from New Zealand, Wingus and Dingus. That's the best moment. Just really summed it up. So
everybody had a laugh with that one.
Everybody had a laugh. So it was just an absolutely a fantastic event. So I absolutely loved it. Well done, Louisville. They signed a 5-year contract there. So the Vex Robotics World Championships will be there for the next 4 years.
So you're going to go back. You're going to take Sister Sheila, introduce her to the mayor, or at least this Army Colonel, because he sounds pretty dreamy.
He was dreamy. Okay. He was great. So that's it. But more to come. I know we have other stuff to move on to. So maybe after the Kentucky Derby next week, I can do an analysis, because I did take the back barn tour of the Kentucky Churchill Downs as well. That was the one thing I got a chance to do.
Do you have any ponies you want us to bet on for the Kentucky Derby? Do you want to
American Pharaoh? He's the one. We saw him working out, and apparently he's the favorite, and he looked good to me, Julie.
Okay, Liam. That's
good. Pretty fast.
That's you heard it here at Satellite Sisters first. Okay, that's good. Your scouting report. Put your money down on American Pharaoh.
Yeah.
Okay.
The American Pharaoh. So anyway, thank you. Thanks to all the Satellite Sisters who recommended places in Louisville and then said, "Oh, never mind. You can't get there. There's a giant fireworks show." So. Thanks to Derby Week. But we did. We had some good barbecue. We got out to a couple of good meals. It was a very nice city. Lovely city. Lovely people. Lovely people. And incredibly good waiters and waitresses, I have to say. Some girls hustling. Some waitresses really hustling. Because, you know,
you're hungry.
You're hungry and you have a large team dinner. You have like 30 kids and parents. That's a lot. That's a tough table. And so good job. Good job, Louisville.
Well, that's an outstanding report.
Thank you.
But things have been happening in the world since you were gone.
Yeah.
I don't know if you landed in Los Angeles in time on Sunday to experience the melee that happened at Target over the weekend.
I did not.
Can we talk about Target?
Please, yes.
Right. Well, as some of you may know, Target from time to time has the limited releases of designer clothing, okay, that they get designers to design exclusively for Target, sort of a less expensive line of their items. They've done this with Missoni and with other brands. And so this Sunday was the release of Lily Pulitzer, which is, she is the queen of preppy clothing. Can we say that?
I think
you know Lily Pulitzer. It's very, she's from Palm Beach, Florida. Very brightly colored shifts and bathing suits and lots of flowers and pink and lime green and blue. And it was heavily promoted here in Dallas. I don't know if it was in Los Angeles or in Louisville, wherever you were. So, but, you know, they really, they had some cute ads and, you know, but they had, they just, the demand for the Lily Pulitzer clothing was out of control. I mean, the lines here in Dallas, people started lining up the night before because it was going to open on Sunday. Did you? And so hundreds and hundreds of people were trying to get this merchandise either in the store or online. At one point, they crashed the Target website. Because there was so much demand for this Lily Pulitzer merchandise.
You know, I had no idea like that it was that Lily was that popular outside of areas that are super preppy. I didn't know that, because I think of, you know, Lily as just those summer shifts that other, our mom was not a real Lily Pulitzer wearer, but other moms in Connecticut were growing up, you know, and they had the golf skirts and the tennis skirts.
Yes, and the shorts. And the men with the, like, they have like, you know, crazy colored pants for men. And
it was very popular in Connecticut because it was meant to design for people in country clubs in Connecticut. So I was surprised that it was such a nationwide thing. I think of Lily as being just a tiny slice, but Julie, I landed at 1 o'clock Sunday. I knew all the stuff was gone. It was gone. There wasn't even any point in going. Did you snag any for Alice?
I thought it would be really cute to get for my granddaughter, Alice, you know, a little shift. Yes. I mean, she'd look cute in it, or maybe one of the little bathing suits. So I thought I might swing by after church, but forget it. You couldn't even get in the, you couldn't get anywhere near the parking lot. So I was like, oh my gosh. So there was no swinging by for Lily Pulitzer. But they created, you know, all this, you know, they created all this momentum and people demand, and then they can't meet the demand, and then all these people go away mad, and, you know, then, you know, and then now, you know, they're reselling the Lily Pulitzer stuff on eBay.
Yeah, that seems crazy.
That seems wrong. Yeah. That seems totally wrong to do it. I mean, I guess they did camp out overnight to get the stuff so that they have put some sweat equity into the merchandise there at that point. But I mean, why don't they just, you know, manufacture more shifts, you know, or more pillows?
I'm sure that a retailer could tell us why, that because the limited edition creates the demand. And if it was just all Lily all the time, no one would care. It would just be Target clothing. But for some reason, knowing that there wasn't much of it, that you had to line up the night before, that's what makes it special. Would I buy a $40 Lily Pulitzer shift on eBay for $100? No, it's still a piece of Target clothing, right?
Right, Liam. Right. But for Target, it seems like it creates so much ill will. You know, it like makes me mad. Why do you do that? Okay.
I don't think so. I think you're one of the few that have ill will. I think other people enjoyed it. It was a thing. I saw tons of people Facebooking about it and social media, and someone commented, I can't wait to see all of us in the very same Lily Pulitzer shift this summer.
If I see some woman in those Lily Pulitzer flip-flops, that which look really cute, I'm going to be mad. I'm going to rip them off the feet.
Okay.
I anticipate some violence, Leon. There's going to be violence.
Okay.
I don't know that, but I would like that explained. I just don't understand, like, as when the people in charge at Target, when they sit around and they try to, you know, they talk about their strategy, how this works for them.
Well, I think the first time, I can't remember who the first designer was that they did this with, that it sort of really, Mizrahi, I think maybe.
Then Missoni.
Caught them off guard. I think the first time it was sort of an accident, but then it became kind of a thing. So, because sometimes you see the designer where it just sits there. Some of the stuff does not sell out really fast. Yeah. This just happened to be kind of wearable, fun summer stuff that people, you know, wanted to be a part of. So don't be a hater, Julie. Just move on.
I'll try. Well, I want to move on to a couple of other trends, Leanne, that are out there. It's Tuesday, and we like to be on top of these trends. Well, I don't know whether this is good news or bad news, Leanne, but dinner theater is back.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
It depends on the quality of the theater and the quality of the dinner.
So this is it. It's dining, it's drinks, it's drama, Leanne.
Ooh.
And it really is sort of, it's the intersection between the theatrics that is now a part of dining, you know, that the chefs are now all famous and there's a whole element of surprise when they bring the dishes out and the presentation of the food. So they're trying to sort of up this as to create more atmosphere in the restaurants. And one of the ways they're doing this is with magic. There's a restaurant.
Say no more. I'm 100% out. I hate magic. I would rather have 100 mariachi bands walk into a restaurant than one magician. Sorry. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, it sounds great. Oh, wow.
No, that's it. Like the Nomad Hotel in New York City, that's exactly what they have. They're trying to create the surprise and wonder that they have in their food because they do have a world famous chef there. And so the natural alliance is food and magic. But you're not
for me.
You're not going there.
No.
They're trying to like curate the whole experience. There's another restaurant in Chicago that is doing multi-course meals, and you're looking at video art. So as you're sitting there, there are big screens and the art is changing as you're being served different items.
Huh.
How's that sounding to you?
You know, I guess it's if you're with people you don't want to talk to, that sounds like a great idea. You know, I mean, there's some dinners where you don't really want to talk to your dinner guests. So that's a great idea. Yes, let's watch video screens.
Yeah. And they do some levitation at this Nomad Hotel in New York.
Wow.
So if you really didn't, that would be part of it too. But people do like magic. There even Cirque du Soleil is in talks with a couple of restaurant chains to see if they can sort of, you know, spice up the dining experience.
That would just be demoralizing because those people have such incredible bodies. If you're sitting there like eating, you know, French fries and then those Cirque du Soleil people come in, forget it. Forget that's going to backfire. I don't think that's a good idea.
Their bodies are too good.
Yeah.
They're going to be hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah. So I mean, unless it was a colonics restaurant. That's other than that, I don't think that's going to be a successful pairing.
Okay. Well, there's one Tuesday trend that Leon is not going for. So, all right. But here's another one, shoes. Okay. That they had a big story in the Wall Street Journal this week about that the growth of running shoes has actually kind of slowed down, and that in fact, that it has shifted away from people don't want to buy those high tech, high performance shoes. What people are now buying, Leon, is the casual lifestyle shoe, where it looks like sporty, but it's really for like walking around in the mall, perhaps, or just walking around. Walking to dinner theater. So, yeah. Have you seen some of these shoes? They're cute.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. Yeah. I mean, I think if you're actually, most people never actually ran in their running shoes. So there, you know, I wouldn't buy it. I don't understand walking around in running shoes either if you're not a runner. So that makes sense to me. This is a trend appreciate.
They're sort of comfortable. They're lifestyle shoes. They're casual lifestyle shoes. And I have, you know, Leon, I have a trip coming up where I thought I could use a pair of casual lifestyle shoes where I don't want to wear sandals. I wanted something sturdier than that, but so light and packable. So I went to the Foot Locker to see what they had. And I saw Nike has a whole brand of sort of lifestyle shoes. And they had one, you know how they always name their models of shoes. And this was called the Internationalist.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, well, that has my name.
Yeah, it does.
And the nice girl at Lady Foot Locker said, oh, you'll like this shoe because it's really old school. You know, it's got that. It's got a nice old school look on it. Leon, I put that shoe on and I just looked old. I'm just telling it was a sad moment when I realized I can't do old school because I am old. Okay. And So I went for a high tech performance shoe, Leon. That's flashy. It's got lights on it, you know, whatever. That's it. But I think it's something that, you know, perhaps other people might want to be on the lookout for it. So third trend, and this is about it's sort of the life cycle of food trends, Leon. You know how some foods come into fashion and then they fade. And I mean, can we talk about toast enough? I mean, Leon,
I know.
You and I started it, and it just exploded. It exploded. There's not a day at our Facebook page that people don't mention it. But there is a natural arc of a food fad. First, it starts with sort of discovery. It's it's a small group of people. Not many people are in on it. Remember, we were in on that butter in the coffee. Remember, I tried that, the bulletproof coffee. So that's the start. So there are a lot of products like that that are still in the discovery phase. And then as it gains in popularity, it moves more to sort of the emerging phase where, you know, this is something that foodies know about, like high quality, fancy butter. Do you ever buy any of that? Like that pure Irish butter?
I do occasionally. Butter? I'm a Tillamook butter girl. So I do spend a little money on butter, but I don't need to know where the cows are from.
You don't need, okay. You don't care that they're not Irish cows. No. Even though your name is Leon Dolan, I think you should rethink your position on that.
I mean, you know, occasionally when a special event, I'll buy the Irish butter. Okay, but in general, I'm good with the Oregon cows and the Oregon butter.
You know when a food product has really taken hold when you see it being used in other forms. The example is Brussels sprouts. I mean, you used to just boil them up and you roast them. But now we have Brussels sprout salad, which you know I tried this past Thanksgiving. And ixnay on that. Ixnay on that, Liam. Yeah. You don't want a cold Brussels sprout salad with your turkey dinner.
Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life. Aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the Mega Moisture Duo, you can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, Liz. Your youthful glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria Seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea. Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
Stream is.
I had roasted Brussels sprouts at a at the barbecue place. Where was I? I ordered a side of roasted barbecue Brussels sprouts, and they were fantastic. It was someplace unexpected, and I was like, "Well, these are really good. I didn't know they would have these at a barbecue place." It was good.
You can see now, Brussels sprouts have totally taken hold.
Yeah,
as a mainstream, it's like gluten free. It's totally mainstream now. It's taken hold. You know, or pricey organic eggs. Okay. That's now not just a foodie thing. Everybody is looking for those free range organic eggs. But here's the one that has me, that gives me great promise for kale, and which is, I'll get to my point. I know this is a long, long way to get there. As you know, kale is everywhere. But at some point, you move on from some of these food fad products, such as pomegranates. You remember when pomegranates were it? Oh, you had to have pomegranate juice or pomegranate seeds. It was so good for you. But now you know you can get the same nutrients from blueberries. So why not have the blueberries, Leah? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So pomegranates, they're out. I predict this is what is going to happen to kale. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. That we are going to get the nutrients in kale from something that tastes better than a juniper bush. Okay. Okay. That is my report for you.
Whew. Okay. It's a long way to go.
I know it was, Leon, but it was
Get in your semi-annual anti-kale statement. Well, I don't, again, I had a delicious kale salad, several kale salads this weekend, in Louisville. And because I, you know, every once in a while, you just need a kale salad on the road when you've had a lot of burgers and barbecue otherwise. So I'll be sorry to see kale move on. But I have to be honest, it doesn't taste that good, you know. Yes. Push comes to shove, I'd still rather have a spinach salad or an arugula salad than a kale salad. But, you know, I know, Julie, I know you feel strongly about it. So I hope that's what happens to kale, if that's what you want. That's
yes,
what you want, Jewel.
That's really what I want.
It's fine with
okay.
me.
All right, Leah, I think we need to move on because we have a double episode of Outlander to discuss.
We do. Right? Yes, we definitely do. So we could take a break or we'll just roll. We'll just roll into this, right?
Sure.
Okay. So for those of you who are following along, we are doing a recap of the Outlander TV series. We're calling it Sister Sasnatch. We are now doing episodes 10 and episodes 11. Julie, you have the names there. We have
By the pricking of my thumbs was the episode 10. And then The Devil's Mark, Leon, was episode 11.
I have to say, Julie, there's nothing like coming back from a 9-day trip and having two episodes of Outlander on your DVR and no husband around. My husband is on his own business trip now. I was in hog heaven last night, just being able to watch these two episodes back to back. It was like a mini Jamie Fraser film festival. It was fantastic. All right, so let's start with episode 10, By the Pricking of My Thumbs. Julie, this episode had it all. There was writhing, there was riding, there was poisoning, there was fighting, there was dueling, there was manipulating, there was blackmailing, exiling, there was witchcraft, and we even had a giant peacock on a platter. I mean, it was
peacock pie, Leon. That's going on my Thanksgiving menu.
This was a jam-packed episode where so much happened. Where to even start? Where do you want to start?
Well, let's just start with the opening scene, which was all about SEX once again. I mean, there it was, eye-popping SEX coming right at you in the opening scene. And as I watched this scene, my thought was, Claire is never going back to the future. She is never going back to the future. Come on. Right?
I know. There were several moments over the two episodes where she really did have to choose from, like, handsome Highlander or boring historian, like Jamie, handsome Highlander, Frank, boring historian. And in that moment, Julie, I believe she was choosing the handsome Highlander. Don't you?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
You know, what struck me though, about the whole episode, number 10, first of all, clearly their production budgets have gone up from season one to season two, because now they're doing more, you know, extensive exterior shooting. We're seeing various castles and great houses and things like that. There's just a bigger sense of grandeur for the production. Mm-hmm. But Julie, the textures of the clothing and all those things she had wrapped around her neck the whole episode.
Lee, and that was right off the bat. That was amazing that she had, you know, all the fur coats. And here's a little behind the scenes. You know, yeah. The New York Times did a big story this past weekend about how the executive producer of Outlander, Ronald Moore, and the costume designer, Terry Dressbach, are in fact in love. And they get to work together.
Oh, that's very nice.
Isn't that wonderful? So they have, you know, they both had very successful careers and they fell in love. And then they came to work on this show together, which is, and so they're in hog's heaven. But they, you know, they had only one sort of disagreement, which is there was the one scene, sort of a ripping bodice scene where Captain Blackjack Randall rips the bodice off of Claire's dress.
Uh-huh.
And so Ronald Moore wanted the scene to go one way. And Terry kept saying, you know, you can't put all those stitches in those, you know, dresses. They just don't rip off that quickly, you know?
Okay.
So they had a little, you know, behind the scenes little argument about that. And Ronald just said, you got to make the dress rip off. And it certainly did. And it certainly did. But Terry made a very important point when she talked about the costume was how physically constrained the women were of that age.
Yeah.
I mean, when they had to like get all like roped into those things, they could barely move or breathe. So, you know, it's hard for them to be as assertive as you possibly want to be, you know, if you can't breathe or move, you know,
that's true.
When you think about it, I mean, they were really tethered in a very different kind of way. So just a little behind the scenes, Leanne. So
Good. So in this episode, we see a little bit of Scottish history here. We have the Duke of Sandringham coming.
Yes.
We know that he's allied. He pretends to be allied with one brother, but he's really allied with Dougal, the Jacobite brother. And Claire knows this because her boring historian husband from the future has told her this. And so, but the Duke also, you know, likes young men instead of women. And so there's a lot of interesting blackmailing there. There's a fabulous house. There's more like woven leather around Claire's neck, and she kind of strikes a bargain with him that she won't reveal some of his secrets if he helps her file this claim and maybe get Jamie off the hook, which is good because he's a wanted man, a price on his head for a murder that he never committed.
Don't you think the Duke reminds you a little bit of a dowager from Downton Abbey?
Yes.
I mean, he's got a just a grand style about him, the wigs, the high heels, the waistcoat, the pinky ring, you know, he's got some fabulous lines, which he has a scribe sitting there in his main living room, writing it down for his book. So I liked him.
Yeah, I liked him a lot too. But then we have the jealous teenager who really wanted Jamie for herself. She is making some threats to Claire. She left like a bad luck omen under their bed, which sees a lot of action, as we know. Mm-hmm. And so then Claire has this scene in the kitchen with her where Claire just rips into her like, lay off my husband, lay off me, and then slaps her. And that's going to come back to haunt Claire, isn't it?
Oh, I know. But Claire was so fierce in that
scene. She was fierce.
And that young girl, she's total fatal attraction. She is like crazy. You know, you know she's crazy. But she's so crazy, she's not going to give up because she thinks Jamie's her man. But Claire was fierce. I loved it.
And then we had Gellis, the witch in town, or sort of the potion, the healer in town, who reveals that she is in love with Dougal. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That was a good one.
But first,
by surprise,
she did a lot of writhing in the moonlight with fire and a lot of nakedness. And speaking of Cirque du Soleil, I mean, she could be a Cirque du Soleil performer, didn't you think?
Yes, I did, Lane. First of all, my first prediction is that we will be seeing those super nice torches that were out in they're going to be at Pottery Barn. Wouldn't you love some of those for your backyard? They were gorgeous that those women were driving around. And certainly the best line of this episode was when she said, the icy wind whispering over my nipples makes them as hard as acorns. Best line of the episode. You can't write it that stuff, Leanne.
was, well done, Julie. Well delivered too. Almost as good as Gellis in her little high kind of whiny voice with the reedy voice with the accent.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. But she was really rocking the witchcraft there. And then she revealed that she's pregnant. Claire could see that. And that the father is Dougal and that they're in love and they've fallen in love for political reasons and they mean to run off together. And no surprise, hours later, Dougal's wife drops dead. And then several hours, and then there is that raging scene. Dougal needs to get a hold of himself, doesn't he?
I know, really, being a raging drunk with swords, it does not mix. That's what I wrote down, Leon. I just a note to self. Yeah, he was out of control. He was just flailing around with a giant sword. Yep.
And then Claire like puts him down like a racehorse with some sort of potion. But that was unbelievable. And then hours later, Gellis's husband like keels over in the middle of the big state dinner for the Duke of Sandringham.
Yeah.
And we know Claire lets us know it's poison. It's clear from that. Like the old guy had irritable bowel syndrome, but this is poison. Whew, it just didn't stop, though.
I know.
And then Colin, the brother, obviously understands something's going on here. He can see that Gellis and Dougal have something happening between the two of them. That was a long, lingering exchange of looks with, like, slow motion footage in the background. Her husband's just keeled over, and these two were having a moment. So Colin exiles both Dougal and forces Jamie to go with him because Jamie managed to get himself all mucked up in a duel.
The duel scene was wonderful. I loved it. And it totally out Downton Abbey anything. Don't you feel like this show, The Outlander, they think about Downton Abbey?
Yes, that's what I mean. Those exteriors and stuff, that's starting to look like a much grander production than last year. So I like.
So the duel was wonderful. And then a good old fight against a clan, Leon. So it was really a fine scene.
Well, I like that Jamie keeps finding himself like 3-on-1, like, and he's got like 10 swords. He's like that, you know, Hugh Jackman is that werewolf character, whatever that movie is. I don't know what that is. So he's just like ripping people up, stabbing people. And that apparently is just the way things roll there. Any incident can become like a sword fight, you know.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. It's like a lacrosse game, or what they were playing, field hockey that one day.
Robotics, competition.
Right.
Yeah. Just bring out the big swords.
Family drink in a bar. It all goes south very, very quickly there. So Jamie's off. Dougal's off. Jamie gives her a warning. Stay away from Gellis. Things are rough there. And then that little teen witch gets back. Draws Claire into the mystery, draws her to Gellis's house, and they both get arrested for witchcraft. Locked up.
I know.
And I was like, no, just take off that beautiful textured thing around your neck so you don't choke to death, which they did. He took that home to his wife, that guard, I think. And so then we're left hanging. What's going to happen? The witchcraft trial is about to start. So we move into episode 11, The Devil's Mark. Okay, what'd you think of this episode, Joel?
I love this, Lena.
Yeah.
This was a fantastic episode, sort of emotionally. I really felt connected to it. There was a little less sex in it.
Yes.
You know? So more like storyline. So that was good. You know, and it was witch versus witch in that opening scene where they're in that pit. But it was, you know, again, Claire's a pretty good actress.
She is a good actress.
You know, that was an excellent scene. They were so mad at each other. But they're still in those corsets, Lane.
I know.
They're in the pit. And I don't know how they were sleeping on the rocks, you know, but they knew that this was it, that they were accused of being witches. And, you know, they had to spend a terrible night in the pit. And then the next day, okay, this was the best line in The Devil's Mark, as they're pulled out of the pit and they're obviously building the stake where they're going to be burned at in a little while. It's Gallus says, it's not a maypole, Claire. She didn't know what it was. So what do you think of that trial, Leanne?
Well, I like that the McKenzie lawyer, Ned Gowan, shows up like Mark Garagos, you know.
Yes.
He's like, He's like Robert Durst's lawyer, you know, Dick DeGaren. He shows up. He doesn't have the blessing of Colin McKenzie to come and defend them, but he's going to defend them anyway. And he has sort of that kindly old man turning testimony around. And it looks like things are going pretty well for the witch defendants. You know, even the creepy priest shows up, and that's a dramatic moment where he kind of acknowledges that exorcism was not really the path to go, that Claire seemed to have a special gift. You know, we hear about the changeling baby. Yeah. That was actually very moving, I thought. There was, mm-hmm. you know, Julie, time and time again, I'm surprised that like the acting is better than it should be and the writing is better than it should be in a story that is essentially about time travel.
I know.
But hopefully, don't worry.
But I have to say one thing about the courtroom scene. Yeah. I have, if you look at that scene again, that the hair, the amount of bad hair in the courtroom from the spectators, I was like, that is the most disgusting hair I've ever seen in one collection of people. I don't know. I guess they just, that town had no shampoo, no soap whatsoever. There's a lot of bad hair.
You know, sometimes I don't understand, like, don't you see the dirt on your face? Don't you know you're dirty? Like, why wouldn't that bother you at any? That's in historical dramas. You always see that like everyone's dirty all the time. I mean, in Scotland, they have plenty of water. It's not like they.
That's right, Liam.
They could wash up.
Their faces.
Wash up.
And wash their hair.
I don't know. I'm sure some historian, I know they didn't have a lot of mirrors like we do, and they didn't understand the benefits of hygiene like we do now. I would just think it would be uncomfortable to have your face be dirty and bloody. It's often bloody too in Outlander, often dirty and bloody. But then the tide turns on them and, they have to turn against each other. Ned Gowan says, this is our only strategy. Claire, you have to testify against Gellis. You have to say she turned you. But Claire's a satellite sister. She won't do it, right?
Yeah. I love that. And I think she was really strong. But Gellis has quite a defense where she just, again, rips off the bodice.
Yes. That's her thing. She just is a hippie chick.
She wants to feel the wind.
on her acorn nipples. I know. She just... At heart, she's like in 1968. Now we know why. Now, Julie, did that surprise you? Because I have read the book, so I knew that was coming, but you did not.
I didn't know that. And as soon as she said that she was a 1968 hippie, it just made total sense. Her character made sense. So I got that.
Yes. Gellis secretly reveals to Claire that she is also from the future. And then she really falls on her sword. Claire is able to get away. When once again, Jamie shows up, swords ablazing and
like,
fight.
And it's like 50 people on one. And he's there, you know, and he's the man, Lynn. He is the man.
He's the man. Again, why is there ever a doubt? Handsome Highlander. Boring historian. I don't know. I don't know why there's ever a doubt, which is again why 20 million people have read the books, because there's no doubt in anyone's mind. So Gellis falls on her sword. She rips, we know she rips off her clothes, but she shows us, quote, the devil's mark, which is a vaccine mark. Uh-huh. And so there you go. That's a turning point as Jamie and Claire go off into the forest together. They manage to get away. And again, couldn't someone lace up the back of Claire's dress?
She's a little drafty. She didn't get fit.
She never eats. She doesn't drink anything except liquor. I just worry about her physical health. But
she'd have a nice slice of peacock pie at the end of the day.
So then
this scene was touching.
It was very touching because she has to reveal. Jamie asks, well, you have the devil's mark too. It's a vaccine mark. And I'm just sitting at home going, don't say it. Don't say it. Please don't say it. Please. Things are going so well. Please don't say it. And then she says it. I'm from the future. And then... That's when you're reminded, right, this is a story about time travel. Okay. I thought it was just a sweeping historical romance, but at the heart, it's about time travel. And I know that turns a lot of people off, but then she tells her story. And what does Jamie do?
I know. He believes her, Leon, and he takes her. He loves her so much. He's willing to give her up.
I know, Jewel.
I was like, no, don't go back to the rocks. Where, I don't know, somehow you managed to go through the rocks to a different time Okay.
I know.
You know how much I hate time travel.
I know.
Almost as much as you hate magic. But he does that because he loves her.
I know. And she can't do it. She can't go back. Again, why would you?
Other than hot showers, really.
I mean, there are a couple of things you're going to miss from the future. But you're really going to miss, you know, Jamie's wake-up call. So, Jamie, good morning, Jamie. You're going to miss that a lot. I mean, a lot. So, at the end of the episode, Claire shows up. Jamie, he's back. She's back. She didn't go through the rocks. And there's that tear. Did you see the tear?
I know, Leon, the tear. So, I'm in deep now. I've lost my husband. He won't watch it anymore. I don't know at what point, but I think it was like the witches dancing in the forest. He left. I was like, fine. I am in deeply. I'm going all the way with Outlander.
Okay. All right. So next week we know they get to Jamie's castle. And I thought it was very touching when he said there's only like violence and danger here for you. And that's what we've seen week after week. There's just a lot of physical violence and he's trying to protect her from that. But there we go. Gellis, 1968. She's the man. That was very brave of her. I liked
it. She was.
I hope. Yeah, that was.
She was a love child. She did it. She is. That's it. It was a very, you know, that was the generation of the protesters. They were strong. You know, they stood up to the man, Leon.
Yeah.
So
and she thought she was going to come back to the past and make a difference for the Jacobites. She was on a mission, you know, she was raising money and she was going to support the rising. And Claire just wants to hang out with Jamie.
I think it's a very solid plan.
All right, so stay with us for more Outlander recaps throughout the week. You can always find us at satellitesisters.com. You can find us at our Facebook page or the group page. Just ask to join. We'd be happy to do that. Thanks to everybody who has supported us over the years. We really appreciate it. If you're new to Satellite Sisters, lots and lots of shows on iTunes, on Stitchers, or at our website that you can catch up on. And Jewel, you have any big plans for the week?
Yes, Leon, we had a big birthday party celebration coming up for my husband. So
that's such a good reminder.
Because
my husband's birthday is tomorrow and I always forget it. Totally.
Okay.
I can't tell you how many times I've nearly forgotten his birthday.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad I could remind you about your husband's birthday. Phew. Okay. I guess you have some plans for this week too.
Yeah, I got some plans. Okay, good one. Thank you. All right, well, have fun, and don't forget, call your satellite sister.